Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the incredible Creekside Room, today's speaker is Charles Lane, and he will be speaking on Garibaldi to Lassen, the Cascade Volcanoes. So let's listen in on Charles Lane.
Geologists consider this mountain to be perhaps the most violently eruptive of the Cascade Peaks, and only 20 miles away from Holden Village. When you walk up to the Portal Mine Museum next, and you walk in the front door, take an immediate look to the right. Some of you who were on the hike with me the other day, I pointed this out, but in a display case on the immediate right is the Glacier Peak pumice. That's that light brown, yellow-colored rhyolitic pumice. But I told some of you, you can pick up on some of the hiking trails around here. It came from Glacier Peak in that 12,000-year-old eruption. And it can be found, some of that pumice can be found well over in Montana. To put this in a slightly different context, the 12,000-year-old eruption of Glacier Peak kicked out about 2.5 cubic miles of material. Mount St. Helens in 1980 kicked out about a quarter of a cubic mile of material. So this 12,000-year-old eruption here was an order of magnitude larger than the St. Helens eruption of 80. Ma'am.
Was this volcano bigger or smaller before that eruption?
They think it was somewhat larger. Most all of the Cascade volcanoes down to Adams via glaciation and eruption tend to be smaller than what they have been in the past. Adams is, we think, just about the same size. It's about as big as it's ever been. So an even bigger mountain at that point in time. And like St. Helens, this blew out somewhat to the north-northeast side, which would be toward Holden Village. Just to make your day.
How did they determine how long ago it was that they erupted?
There are actually a fascinating number of ways that some of the eruption dates are determined. On some of the stuff, the 200-year-old lahars, the mud flows that came off of here, they've actually got those by counting tree rings on living trees on a moraine that the lahars actually rolled over. In other words, the lahars came and flowed around the trees. And so they did some tree ring chronology on that. A lot of this stuff, of course, is historical. Many of these eruptions are in historical time, witnessed not only by Native Americans, but by the early explorers in the region. And a lot of this stuff that is anywhere from 1,000 to that 40,000 number, what they have done is they have dated the first carbon material they can find underneath the lava flows or underneath the particular deposit, and they've given that a go with carbon-14.
How would a tree ring, that would tell how old the tree was, but how would that tell how long it was between the volcano and now?
Well, what the tree tells you, it gives you an oldest date in that sense. In other words, the tree was there before the lahar flowed around it. So if this is a living tree on the moraine or on the small hill and the lahar flowed over it, then the lahar cannot be any older than the tree. It can be younger, and that lahar could be younger than 200 years of age, but it can't be any older than 200 years of age. That's how they tend to work those things.
Those trees died a little bit at that point.
Well, if this one did not, as a matter of fact, because it was far enough away from the volcano, and a lahar is a mud flow. And again, those Northwesterners of you remember all of that going down the North Fork of the Tootle. But this was far enough away that the heat content of the lahar, the mud flow, had pretty much dissipated. And it was just this mud flow, like a mud avalanche or mud debris by the time it got there, and just rolled around the tree, and the tree had no problem. So this one is Rainier from the North, which is kind of the granddaddy of the Cascade volcanoes with respect to size, over 14.4. The only one of the Cascade volcanoes over 14,000 feet. You're looking south, and at the far left is Adams, and you see that white spot just to the right of Adams. That's some of the snowfields on Hood, down on the Oregon side. St. Helens is basically back behind Rainier, where you can't get a good look at it. But this is the big one. This is the view that most of the Seattle area residents get. This is probably from more down toward the Puyallup region, don't you think, Dorothy? For the view of this view of Rainier. So this is a view off to the Rainier area from down Puyallup and that part of the world. 14.4, last eruption, about 2,000 years. But continuing thermal activity on Rainier, steam eruptions. No geologist working this part of the world thinks that Rainier is dead by any stretch of the imagination. High heat signature in the infrared. This is still an active volcano, a very large one. From the south, off down toward Packwood, this is Rainier, and to the right, that peak that you see over there is Little Tahoma. Rainier is referred to the Indians as Tahoma, the mountain that was God. It is impressive. Supports the biggest glacier field in the contiguous 48 states. Rises well above the surrounding mountains. And it's impressive no matter which way you view it from. You can see it from Yakima, you can see it down around Packwood, you have the great view from Seattle. It's just a big piece of rock.
From different points in Longview, you can see all three of those mountains.
Yes.
You can see four the other day from Portland. It was the most beautiful clear day, and you can see right near in Hood and St. Helens and
Here's one of the things that geologists like to play with. It's not something that everybody gets into, but this is on the flanks of Rainier, and you're looking at some of the ash fall beds that are recorded in this basically pile of sediment, or this stack of sediments. You think this kind of like layers of pancakes, but the interesting thing to note here is that the red and the brown are ash fall deposits from Rainier itself. That lowest white layer that you see there, it corresponds petrologically, in other words, in its mineral composition and in its age, by the age dating, it corresponds to the eruption of Mount Mazama. That's the Crater Lake eruption. And the upper white ones are about 3,000-year-old eruptions of Mount St. Helens. So these are the Mazama eruption and Mount St. Helens eruptions recorded on the flanks of Rainier. Probably we don't need a whole lot of introduction to this. That's Mount St. Helens as it was. And Spirit Lake, and why St. Helens really was the garden spot of the Pacific Northwest. Just a stunningly beautiful place. That all changed on the 18th of May, 1980. I personally would appreciate any of you Northwesterners who are still here on Saturday, if you would come to the session, which I've entitled Mount St. Helens Remembered. I've got a short video of some of this, so it's actually video motion rather than slide. But the purpose of the session is going to be for all of you guys to tell your stories of where you were that morning. Everybody I've ever met from Oregon and Washington knows where they were that morning and what they were doing and how it's affected people's lives. And it really makes for a good session. So if you're here and able, I sure appreciate you, you trying to come in.
What time is that Saturday?
Oh, you'd have to ask that. I can't remember if it's the morning or the afternoon. I'd have to check the board. Sorry, I don't remember. Andy, you remember when that is? This is the morning of May 18th. This is off to the southwest toward Vancouver and Portland. And St. Helens is full tilt at this point. This is a sight to make virtually any Washingtonian cry. This is what the Tudor looked like after the fact. Mud flows down the Tudor River Valley, which prior to that, perhaps one of the most scenic river valleys in North America. Just a steaming mass of mud. Yeah. This is the July 22nd, 1980 eruption. It was not done on the morning of May 18th, but there was nothing quite as cataclysmic as that. And that's the moonscape or the barren landscape produced by all the pyroclastic flows, debris flows and things that shot out off toward the north, northeast side of the mountain. There's the re-emergent Mount St. Helens. That's the central cone that has built up since the eruption. Still steaming, still growing, fits and spurts. But you get a very nice picture of the portion of the mountain that was blown away.
Did this break into fragments, or were there huge boulders thrown out, or what?
There was a little bit of everything that you've never wanted to see out of this. There were boulders larger than houses that came out of here. And there was also this choking ash that came out of here. I'm trying to remember, but it seems like Yakima, anybody in Yakima about that time? Yakima had something like, tell me if this sounds familiar at all, 600,000 tons. 600,000 pounds.
There's like a 6 to 10 inches in Pullman.
I mean, even all the way over in Pullman there was this stuff. In Yakima, you were driving down the street, if you could drive, at high noon with your lights on. It was perfectly dark. Mm-hmm. It was a fine ash.
It's so but fine it gets into the cylinders.
Sure got in the cylinders your car.
Yeah, yeah, you don't drive long. Your air filter fills up and you're done for.
Yeah, your air filter is just not up to the job. But there were all kinds of things. The heat, the shock wave. Poor old Davy Johnston was sitting there kind of on the far right on what is now known as Johnston Ridge. And, of course, he got out his radio message to Vancouver where he was saying, Vancouver, Vancouver, this is it. And that was it. And as far as I know, they've never found him. And he was something on the order of 6 or 7 miles away. And it was that fast.
It was kind of phenomenal because there's trees right in the front of the path. That there was a hillside that stopped the blast. And would separate, and they go around these stands of trees, and they're still there. They're nice and green, where the rest of it was just
devastated.
Down and just—they look like matches. I got pictures at home. Of course, they got most of the wood cleaned up now, but just like matchsticks, the way that
yes.
stuff was laid in there.
Yes. The blast was absolutely staggering, and topography helped in some respects. In other respects. You know, it was very odd. It was very hit and miss. The blast rolled over the top of a hill and down the other side. those of you who haven't ever seen a picture like this before, this is the New Spirit Lake. This picture was taken in the summer of 88. And to the right, that whitish beach-looking area, those are all felled trees. That's basically a big log jam.
There's fish back in the lake.
Fish back in the lake. Fish back in the lake. The place is making an amazing recovery. We went down and spent quite a bit of time two summers ago after we left Holden. And the lake actually looks very nice. There's still the log jam there, but making a recovery. Now, if you stand kind of on the left shoulder of there at St. Helens and then take a look due east, there's where you'll see Adams. In fact, some of the devastation path from St. Helens is right in the foreground. So those cleared areas there from the St. Helens blast. There's Adams. Notice how sort of rounded it looks. It's not the most attractive of the Cascade volcanoes. It's probably the least dangerous with respect to its eruptive history. Its eruptive history has basically been one of lava flows and not the pyroclastic ejecta, not the violent eruptions, but lava flows that have given it that shape. And 12,276 feet makes it the second tallest of the Cascade volcanoes outside of going down to California to Shasta. So this is higher than Baker, this is higher than Glacier Peak, it's higher than all the rest of them except for Lanier. A couple of interesting side notes to this. It's the only one of the Cascade volcanoes where somebody ever took out a mining claim right in the summit, right up in the summit center, summit cone. There was a fellow who went in there to try and mine sulfur, not successfully, but gave it a go. The other thing that's kind of interesting is that in the early exploration of the Cascades by the United States government, there was a movement to name the Cascades the President's Range. And that's why you do have Adams and Jefferson and Washington. Those other two are on down in Oregon. That's why you do have them. But it was actually Hood and St. Helens that were supposed to be named Washington and Adams. So Mount Hood was supposed to be Mount Washington. Mount St. Helens was supposed to be Mount Adams. Interestingly enough, when the cartographers started making the first topographic maps, they had erroneous latitude and longitude information for the location of Mount St. Helens. The latitude and longitude information was wrong. It put Mount St. Helens, which they were going to call Mount Adams at the time, about 40 miles to the east and pretty much straight north of Mount Hood. Well, by the most amazing chance, there just happened to be this mountain there waiting for a name. And that's how Mount Adams was named. Mount St. Helens was supposed to be Mount Adams. Okay, Portlanders, here we are. The view of Mount Hood, high summer, probably the smallest snow cover you're likely to see here. This is no slouch either. Hood goes up to almost 11,300. Oregonians play all over it. There's the summit with Crater Rock sticking up in the middle of it. They ski, they hike, they horseback ride. Now for the bad news. Those geologists who are interested in determining activity on these mountains have noticed that Mount Hood and Mount St. Helens tend to have the same eruptive cycle. In other words, when one has a tendency to be going off, so does the other. geologically speaking, that means that St. Helens is a now event, and Hood might be as well. Just to make all of those even important feel better.
When was the last activity
Hood? The last eruptions on Hood were in the mid-1800s, like St. Helens, in the 1850s, and we have historical record of those eruptions.
The same thing, an explosive
eruption? Yeah, explosive eruptions. Yeah, I'll try to point out if they were steam venting types of events or not. An explosive eruption back in somewhere around 1856, something like that.
So this would be the side that blew.
I think that's right, yes. But those of you, if you've ever driven through Portland on a clear day, I know that's sometimes difficult. But you drive through Portland on a clear day, and Hood is a real dominating figure on the skyline. It's right there, and it's not that far away.
Is that lump in the middle like the dome?
That's like the dome on St. Helens, yes. It's sort of eerie, isn't it? You know, you're starting to see things that... That whole crater up there with that dome middle looks a little bit like St. Helens looks.
Was that a lateral blast like St. Helens?
Well, the mountain has undergone lateral blasts. That's why you see the twin tracks kind of coming out this way towards us. The last eruptions were not substantial. The 1850 eruptions were not substantial and did not substantially alter the appearance of the mountain, but I believe they were this way, this side. Marilyn, anything you want to throw in on this?
Well, I was going to say they do ski up there all year.
Yeah, they ski up here all the time.
And was it, well, they had snow at Holton, was it last week? The day the school got out in the Portland area, the snow and they skied all day at Lunderland.
12 inches.
Yeah, and it was like winter. It was
somebody said there were people in California, it was 104 and they were skiing.
Yep. That's not bad. Okay. One of the more picturesque, and one that you have to get off to the east to see, this is Mount Jefferson. Geologically, pretty inactive, nothing within the last 40,000 years. The glacial erosion, glacial sculpting has done a very nice job of giving you that high peak or point, or as the Europeans say, a horn, as in the Matterhorn. Very picturesque mountain. Your best view is coming north out of Bend on 97 and hitting up the backside of the Cascades. But that's Jefferson. It's no slouch either. It's almost 10,500 from the same height as Glacier Peak.
Are those ice fields glaciers?
There are glaciers. Well, actually, Shasta has glaciers, but it's a very high mountain. Its glacier field only goes down to about 9,000 feet. Once you get this far up north, and we're coming up to the Three Sisters, which is even a little farther south down toward Bend, they have year-round glaciers. By the time you get to Rainier, the glacier fields will descend all the way to about 3,500 feet. You can be at 3,500 feet in Rainier in Washington State and be in ice. Whereas in Shasta, you have to be over 9,000 feet to get. So yes, there are permanent ice fields on these mountains. There are the Sisters and Broken Top from off southeast of Bend. If you've never been to Bend, this is rapidly becoming the retirement center of the world for Californians tired of earthquakes. And one of the reasons is that Bend, Oregon has one of the most fabulous views of the Cascade skyline that you will see. The Three Sisters are...
Bend, B-E-N-D.
B-E-N-D, yeah. Right? The Three Sisters are three big 10,000-foot volcanoes, but there are lots more things around the immediate area than just the Sisters. Broken Top is kind of in front of the South Sister towards us here. Mount Bachelor is down here where all the Bend, Oregon people go skiing. There are a variety of other peaks. We're over here right now by the Newberry Volcanic Crater. which is on the other side, off kind of southeast. And Mount Washington and Mount Jefferson are just in north of here on a clear day. Hood shows up. You can even, if you get high enough, get views of Thielson off to the south. But you can live in Bend, Oregon and have one of the best views of mountains outside of the Alps, I think, anywhere. That's the South Sister, which is the tallest of them. This, geologically speaking, is an exquisite photograph. All of those light-colored, let's see if I can get in here and get my hand in my, all of these light-colored areas that you see here, all the way around, those are vent eruptions and lava flows that have been dated at 12,000 or so years, not very long ago, as far as geologists are concerned. Oh, I'm sorry, not 12,000, 2,000 years. 2,000 years, not very long ago as far as geologists are concerned, but the aerial view does them great justice. It's very easy to see from a view like this, but your best view here is of South Sister.
Can I ask a question about that?
Sure.
What's on the surface of those things? Is it something that doesn't grow, or is it
right,
rock, or what?
It's pretty much bare rock yet. We'll look at some more of this in the immediate area, but it's pretty much bare rock, and you'll have a hard time mistaking them for what they are. You'll walk across it, they get to be obsidian-like, kind of glassy. They keep that sort of ropey texture of the hoi-hoi-type lava flows. You'll not make a mistake when you're there in terms of identifying what those things are. Yes, they are not vegetated yet. Sure.
Strung out like they are and sort of in line with the other peaks there. Is that along the fault line then?
Yes. You've got some faults through here. The sisters are lined up. The rest of the mountains tend to follow, if not on the exact same line, then on offset trends. So there may be a series of faults. That's probably what's controlling the magma ascent. Yes. Good observation.
One of those erupts is that, do the others...
Don't go off in sympathy.
Are they all tied together?
Well, I suspect over geologically long periods of time, you can kind of take that view. The most active area currently is off to the left of Middle Sister, which you see behind the south right there now. The Collier Cone is the area that's giving the best infrared thermal heat signature today. The dates on the different flows and eruptions on these things are somewhat different. So they're it's not like you have three smoking volcanoes all at once. I think that would be quite fortuitous.
Charles, is that road? That is a road, right? It kind of goes around. Now, is that where that park is? There's a new national park there?
Yes, there's a park in there. Bend also has the advantage of having one of the greatest road and trail networks into the volcanic peaks area anywhere in the world. There are literally hundreds of miles in roads and trails in here. I am told that the Hot Dog Mountaineers will actually hike Bachelor, South, Middle, and North Sister, and do them all in a day, because you have such good road access to all of them. But there are some spectacular parks up in here, and wonderful access, lots of lakes. Whatever type of outdoor recreation you like to do, you can do it in here.
Lava tunnels,
all kinds of stuff. It really is a beautiful spot, and like I said, the Californian retirement community has found out about it, and it is growing dramatically as we speak. My cousin, who has lived there for quite a number of years before everybody discovered his retirement community, isn't all that happy, basically because the infrastructure, the road system in town, is really choked.
You mean local bridges that are down? They're supposed to be creating a freeway around it.
Right. As we drove through here a week or so ago while they were working on the freeway around it. Yes, if you've never been to Bend, Oregon, you should go. It's really quite a place. There is Middle and North Sister, and we are looking for that little mountain just off to the left of Middle Sister. Middle is the one closest to us. That little mountain is Washington. The big mountain that you see off on the distance between the two, between Middle and North Sister, that's Jefferson. And then if you look back to your left, way up in the upper left corner, there's the vaguest hint of Hood up there. So you can see a long ways up the Oregon Cascade when you're up. This photograph would have been taken up on South Sister. That's Mount Bachelor, which is off a little farther south yet. The date on that is about 8,000 years, kind of a single cinder cone building event. This is where the ski area is. And ski lift runs right up to the top. It's not even a hike. You can sit in the chair and go right to the top, stand on top of Mount Bachelor. So it really is quite a volcanic playground. It's something that if you've not seen, you should try.
Is that Mount Bachelor?
Bachelor, as Bachelor. In an unmarried man.
Okay.
Mount Bachelor. This not too impressive view is way off from the south of the Newberry Caldera Complex, which is off southeast of Bend a little bit. This is kind of an interesting part of the world. No high mountain here, but a big complex of cinder cones and lava flows all in one area. Here's the caldera area. This is taken from Paulina Peak. That's Paulina Lake that you're looking at off there. There's the corner of Paulina Lake and East Lake, which occupy the whole greater caldera complex. Both of those lakes have hot springs associated with them. And various energy companies are pretty excited about this because they've done some drilling in this caldera complex and they have recorded higher temperatures at shallower depths than those found in the geysers geothermal center in California. And if you don't know anything about the geysers center, the geysers is a major electrical producing region by the use of hydrothermal power or geothermal power. It could be that there is going to be some development or effort at development of geothermal power from within the Newberry complex. Again, the lava flow, this is actually an obsidian flow, glassy, right down here to the lower right in front of us. Very distinctive, not vegetated. The carbonaceous material that they have dug out from underneath this lava flow gives a date of about 1,400 years, meaning the lava flow has to be younger than that. Travel a little farther south on your way down toward Crater Lake and you will go past Mount Thielson, about 9,000 feet in elevation. Another one of these volcanoes, and you can start to get a feel for this too. Notice how pointed this is, you know, a horn-like appearance, that kind of triangular shape. When you see stuff like this, a fairly good first assumption is that this volcano has not been active in a long time. The Ice Age glaciation has carved it up and brought it up to that point, and there's not been any activity to renew the mountain in that time. And that's a fairly safe call to make up and down the Cascades. This is another one of these things. There's no record of any activity within the last 40,000 years. There is a nickname for this mountain, though, or not necessarily a nickname. Oh, yeah, it is a nickname. That should give you a little pause next time you happen to be hanging out anywhere in the immediate vicinity. Mount Thielson is affectionately known as the lightning rod of the Cascades. This is one to be a little careful about hiking on the top of.
Does it actually attract lightning?
Well, I mean, it's the highest thing around by quite a little bit. And what happens is, just as you see there, the clouds build up over the top of it. You get some of the late afternoon thunderstorm behavior. And what makes it so dangerous is that you'll go up there, and when you head up on the mountain, it'll be a nice clear morning, a clear day. There won't be a cloud in the sky. And all of a sudden, the cloud is there. And when that happens, you run for your life. Which actually I did one summer day up on top of Mount Humphreys, which is the tallest peak in Arizona, just north of Flagstaff, out on an otherwise clear day. The afternoon conditions were such that the cloud started forming. And as soon as we noticed this cloud forming, we started literally running down the mountainside. And we were about 150 feet below the summit when the first lightning strike hit the summit. And it just blew up this rock on top of the summit. We had these pieces of rock flying past our ears as we were running down. A week later, there was a guy who was struck by lightning up on top of that. He did live to tell the tale, but the lightning struck him in the hip, went down his leg and out his foot, and it blew out his boot. But the impressive photograph was the photograph of his change and his car keys that were in his pocket, because all fused in a lump. It was just unrecognizable.
So, at any rate, nicknames like that tend to get my attention. Lightning Rod of the Cascades. You may very well recognize this as Crater Lake in southern Oregon. That's the remains of Mount Mazama, probably the most cataclysmic eruption in the Cascades. The date on that, about 7,000 years. If Mount St. Helens blew out about a cubic kilometer of material, Mount Mazama blew out over 30 cubic kilometers of material. Mount Scott is in the far lower left. That's the highest peak. It's kind of hard to get a real feel for it from this high or wide. But that's the highest peak, over 9, up here. And Wizard Island, with a little snow on it, is the cinder cone island out in the middle of the lake.
How deep is that crater?
How deep is the crater?
That's 1,900.
1996, almost 2,000 feet.
Is that the deepest or second deepest in the country?
Well, the Oregonians, I think, would like to call it deepest, but I think there are some deeper soundings out of Tahoe.
The guys on the boat, I think,
said
this is the deepest,
the
second or something.
Well, the guy on the boat, we're talking about Chelan being the third. But this is a deep lake. No matter how you slice it, I think they buy with Tahoe back and forth as to what's the deepest, because they are both right around that 2,000 foot mark, it seems to me.
Are the Steens considered a part of the Cascades?
Excuse me?
Are the Steens Mountains considered a part of the Cascades?
Tell me the location of the Steens.
Oh, they're east, right on the border.
Oh, over in the whole blue mountain area of La Grande over there. No, they are not. And interestingly enough, a different history. Interestingly enough, the blues and all of that over in Eastern Oregon have characteristics more similar to the Klamaths going down into California than with the Cascades.
Well, the Steens are closer to Klamath. They're not more among them in that area.
Yeah. but not considered part of the Klamaths. That's beautiful country as well.
What about Hood or Hoodoo?
Which is over east as well, right?
No, Hoodoo is
Or you're talking about the Hoodoo Rocks here at Crater Lake?
No, Hoodoo is just west of Sisters.
Okay, well, no, that's part of it.
Yeah, but I say, if you want to see Centerfield, you can see them right from the highway because you're driving
right
through.
You make that drive as you're going across.
Right. I mean, there's just nothing but a volcanic rock there.
Yeah. I know. I was thinking, there are some Hoodoo Rocks, what are called Hoodoo Rocks, just here on the south side of the Crater Lake.
They ski there in the wintertime, uh-huh. But it's probably one of the first ones they ski on, but it's also one of the first ones they get off of.
Yeah. Many of you have seen this photograph before. That is Wizard Island in Crater Lake. That's that beautiful blue water of Crater Lake. Just the most amazing color blue. Wizard Island is about the youngest volcanic event in the Crater Lake region, and about 1,000 years younger than the primary eruption, making about 6,000 years of age. Beautifully symmetrical cinder cone. You can land on the island if you take the boat. The last I heard, they would not let you stay overnight.
I walked down that last 26 years ago, but I'll tell you, that is a hike on the side of that.
Well, it's one of these two steps forward, three back.
Right. Well, it's a complete, just, it's just like this. It's worse going down than going back.
Yeah.
You think it's easier, but boy, I'll tell you, you're like ready for a bubble.
Here's the east rim, some of the volcanic rocks, but you're looking up toward Thielson up there in the upper left, up on the skyline.
That orange spot.
One of the volcanic layers, as a matter of fact, they have a wonderful trail that loops around the whole thing, and they're different vista points and vantage points, and they do a very nice job of explaining the geology. That unit has a particular name, but it is like a volcanic ashfall deposit in this, and brilliantly colored. This photograph is actually a little washed out. The rest of the east face is more colorful than that as well. I like to stand over on the west face at sunset and try to get some of the sunset colors over here. It really is very pretty.
Okay. Don't think how Crater Lake is one of the seven wonders of the world?
It is to me. I think it's one of the real jewels of the national parks. I really do. These are called Hoodoo Rocks, which is, you're kind of throwing me there a little bit. Or a Badlands topography. You see this in Bryce, the big Badlands. This is about 10 miles southeast of Crater Lake. You can also see it to a certain extent in the campground areas down below Crater Lake. But that's all volcanic ashfall material, easily eroded, fairly uniform type of consistency to it, and it tends to erode into those little spires, which a lot of people, including geologists, call hoodoo rocks.
They're going to open a new hotel. Well, it's the old hotel they remodeled up there at the Crater Lake.
Yeah.
Next May, I think it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm for it. I'll try to get there every chance I get. This is one of the lesser known, but still pretty impressive piece of work in southern Oregon. This is Mount McLaughlin. And this is on the road north out of Klamath on the way up toward Bend. But if you're high enough around Klamath or even over on the other side by Grants Pass, this is a pretty fair view. This is almost 9,500 feet. The west flank is the snowfield melt off the west flank actually is the municipal water supply for the greater Medford area, the Rogue Valley area, over on the west. Last dated eruption about 1,500 years ago. So it's, again, something kind of keep in mind. California, Shasta with the sunlight on it off in the distance. What we have in the foreground is the Medicine Lake volcanic field. It is larger than the Newberry field up in Oregon. But it's harder to pick out because there is so many things that have gone on. Cinder cones, lava flows that have kind of pockmarked the topography. You see this nice lava flow in front of us in the middle distance. But you don't realize that you may be in the West's largest volcano. I mean, the Medicine Lake volcanic complex may be the largest volcano there, but it's not a great big mountain. It's an area of vent eruptions, lava flows, little cinder cones. This is the thing that gave us the Modoc Plateau and that part of the world.
there are lava flows right there. I mean, hard as rock. Walk over them, bang on them. It's obsidian. Get yourself a nice piece of obsidian. Just realize that those are a series of lava flows that flowed out 100 to 150 years ago. That's historical there. And historically observed.
Are these the lava beds just over the border?
This is part of that whole Lava Beds National Monument area, just over the border, and kind of off, you go off over toward Tule Lake.
Yeah.
That part
they go
of the
right road. To the edge of Tule Lake.
Yes, go right to the edge of Tule Lake. Everybody should make this trip to see the lava beds, and then go on into Tule Lake to buy the horseradish.
By the horseradish.
Oh, yes. I think the best horseradish in the world comes out of Tule Lake.
That's for
I
me.
I think if a person does so go there, if they really want to look, they better plan on a couple days. I had my aunt who loved to show people the lava beds rush me through there in a day.
Yeah.
And that was way too fast.
Way too fast. And plan on spending some time and plan on going over to Tule Lake and buying your horseradish. I can't recommend it high enough. I mean, if you're a horseradish lover at all, you should try the Tule Lake horseradish. Well, there is the big one. That is Shasta. It is not as tall as Rainier, although almost. It's 14,162. But the thing about Shasta is that the countryside around it is much lower than the countryside around Rainier. The countryside is only 3,000 or 4,000 feet high, virtually all the way around it. It has a relief of 10,000 feet. It is a stunningly huge mountain. Again, you Midwesterners may not know too much about this place, but if you want to meet more New Age practitioners than virtually any place else I can think of, come here. You'll find out that the Atlantans, the lost city of Atlantis people are here. what is it? The Lemurians? Am I doing that right, Marilyn? Lemurians? They all exist in caves underneath the mountain. And this is a vortex for channeling and all kinds of stuff. This is quite a place. It's an impressive view. You can see the nature of the mountain. You can see the big dome on which the thing is up, and then the violent eruptions that produce the peak up above there. Just to the lower right is Shastina, or Little Shasta. Itself, if it were just up there on its own, Shastina is 12,300. That would make it taller than anything in Washington other than Rainier. But a huge, stunningly huge mountain. Last erupted in the mid-1800s. Still some steam ventings, some fumaroles, some hot spots. Good infrared signature when USGS flies over it. This is one of these things, though, if you're on I-5, you can't miss it. You're going north out of California or south from here to California, you can't miss it. It's right there. It is absolutely monstrous. The other thing that you can't miss is Black Butte. And when I say it's on I-5, I'm not kidding. It's right on I-5. I-5 goes over the shoulder of it. This is right at Weed, California. But this is Black Butte, another small volcanic cone complex, basically on the flank of Shasta. But an active volcano, even so. Again, before St. Helens, the geologists were looking north at Baker and south at Shasta as the most likely targets. This is a view from the east of Lassen, and now we've gone to the southern terminus. Lassen is no slouch either. It's 10,000. It's 10,500 almost. It doesn't look like much from Red Bluff when you get a good view of Shasta. Why this is just the highest part of the mountains off over to the east. It's the largest example of what's known as a plug dome volcano, and you see that more rounded profile about it. This one has been historically active. Some of you may know this, but this was extremely active in the years 1914 to 1921. And there are a series of historical photographs. There is a copy in the Tate Ministry office of something called America's Great Volcanoes. I showed it a couple days ago. But in that, it's a video, they have taken the still frame photographs, the black and white photographs of this eruption, and sort of set them in motion. And if you go talk to the Tate Ministry people, they will be happy, I'm sure, to let you look at this stuff. But last erupted in 1914 to 1917, and this is Bumpus Hill on the flanks. When you drive through the Lassen Volcanic Monument, you go right past Bumpus Hill. This is not hard to do. You park your car in the parking lot. The parking lot is basically in the middle of all of this stuff. You can't get away from these fumaroles, these steam baths. There's no geologist in the world that would claim that this volcano is dead. not a one. And that's about it. If I recall correctly, that takes us all the way through from Garibaldi to Lassen and gives you kind of a quick pictorial view.
You'll be able to read this, I'm sure.
It was about 3 years ago when they had a submarine down the bottom of the Crater Lake. They were kind of exploring geothermal down in there. We were up there at that time watching. There are some small volcanic buildups within Crater Lake that do not reach the surface of this island. And they are towards this. And one of the descriptions
wrong class.
What's the future of geothermal power?
I'll tell you where the technological problems right now. If you can get dry heat, in other words, dry rock geothermal energy, which is what they have down in Salton Trough way in Southern California, back over the mountains from San Diego, just in North Mexico, where they have some dry heat geothermal fields there, and that's pretty nice. The problem with the geysers and with this Newberry complex is that it is a wet geothermal heat or wet rock, and that wet rock is pretty nasty stuff because what we're talking about, among other things, is hydrogen sulfide, which is hugely corrosive. I mean, it's deadly. Well, and hydrogen sulfide is deadly. Another health and safety tip. I'm giving these health and safety tips about, you know, where to be in the Cascades. Health and safety tip, if you're ever driving across Oklahoma or Texas through the heart of those oil fields, you'll find that they will have oil storage tanks, and they have the pump jacks, and they have the oil storage tanks. And if you find an oil storage tank that has a windsock on top of it, and you're looking around, there's no airport out here, and it doesn't look like a helicopter landing pad. But there's all of these storage tanks with windsocks on them. That's to let the pumper know if there is enough wind blowing that day, which is usually the case in Texas. Let them know that there's enough wind blowing that day that it's safe to go in. Because the oil is hydrogen sulfide bearing. And there's more than one oil field pumper that has died by going into that thing, climbing out of the truck, and just falling over. I think this oil is deadly.
I helped pull two guys out at the paper mill. They were working on the sewer line there. The accident of two paper machines went down at one time and flooded the sewer system, and they had just broke through into a new manhole. And you take one whip of it, and you're down.
And you're down, and you take several whips, and you're gone. It's extraordinarily difficult. But it's also hugely corrosive on machinery. And that's the problem with the geysers, is that you have to change out the machinery so quickly. And another parenthetical side, that's part of the whole Russian, the former Soviet Union, the whole Russian oil industry has a completely different approach to things than what we do here. They, this whole centralization thing that the Soviets were big on, what they would do is they would take all of their produced fluids out of the oil field and they put them in a common pipeline and ship them to the refining center and separate them there. Those fluids would include salt water, which is corrosive, and oil and water that contain hydrogen sulfide, which is hugely corrosive. And so, they're just setting up their whole pipeline system to fall apart. That's the problem with the wet geothermal, is that it's so corrosive on the equipment. Anything else before we go? It's about that time. Thanks, that was fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.